You're listening to Lanyap, a weekly digest of news, personal finance, brotherly banter, and whatever else is on our minds. From Stokes Family Office.
This is Greg Stokes with Lanyap Podcast. Today is Friday, March 8th, jobs report day. February employment report came out. 275,000 jobs were created. The unemployment rate creeped up from 3.7% to 3.9%. So all in all, really good headline numbers. Underneath the surface, there are some revisions to prior months where they brought down jobs in the prior 2 months by a couple hundred thousand jobs. So good news and bad news in this particular jobs report. And the market opened up today. Right now is about noon central. The market opened up high and has come off quite a bit. And that's especially prescient when you look at individual securities. NVIDIA, which is up like 40% or something like that in the last month,
it's almost doubled year to date.
Is intraday was up 5%. And then right before we hit click on record, was down 5%. So it's a $2 trillion company. So by virtue of the fact that it's had a 10% intraday move from up 5% to down 5%, has wiped off $200 billion of market cap. So pretty crazy.
It's a drop in the bucket.
It's a drop in the bucket, I guess. Yeah. So NVIDIA is actually up 40% in just 15 days, not a month. And to put this as somebody on Twitter, so to put that into perspective, NVIDIA has added an entire Tesla and Starbucks in market cap in the last 2 weeks. And then as far as $200 billion market move, I mean, I don't know what an equivalent company, $200 billion, it's a ginormous company, basically, that is the valuation.
It's like Exxon or Johnson & Johnson. Exxon's $420 billion. J&J, I was looking at this earlier, $380 billion. It's big. It's a lot. It's almost the same size. Did you see this? NVIDIA is within a couple percentage points of the size of Apple now. And so, yeah, maybe. And obviously the AI spend and the infrastructure spend is there. I mean, these big companies are building these massive data centers for the anticipation of the need for productivity gains through artificial intelligence. So there's this gold rush that's occurring right now. And right now the infrastructure layer is being built, and it's being built on top of NVIDIA GPUs. The next step here is the application layer. So what companies are going to build the apps, like the social media companies of the internet day or Google of the internet day? What companies are going to be building the apps on top of the AI infrastructure? That's the next wave here. On jobs, I think you're exactly right. A good headline number followed by some negative revisions for January. So all in all, sort of an average month. And Mark Zandi, who's the chief economist at Moody's, said, which I think is correct, not too hot, not too cold. We're in this Goldilocks economic scenario. He's pushing for rate cuts.
And that's what Jay Powell testified in front of Congress yesterday and said that we're not far off from rate cuts. So I don't know what the market's pricing the first cut. It's probably June or July or something like that, but we're really close. And this data, that you're exactly right, indicates that the Fed provides the Fed what they need to justify doing a rate cut, because there's some negativity in it, even though the headline number is good.
Yep. Speaking of Apple, I saw this and I think it's crazy. First of all, the crazy piece is that the market is having a strong first 2 months out of the year. The S&P 500 is up like 7 or 8% year to date. Apple is down. You would think that Apple is the most important company in the world and that the market would follow what Apple's doing. Apple is now underperforming the S&P 500, not just in 2024, but since January of 21. Three plus years of underperformance versus the market.
They're growing their earnings by like 1 or 2% or something like that. It shouldn't be in the same category as these really high flying growth companies, because it's not really one of those. I mean, they have
their products are obviously ubiquitous. Everybody has an iPhone, you know, but it's getting to a point of where the market's so saturated and they've exhausted a ton of their growth opportunities. I mean, I'm sure they still have international growth opportunities, but it's not the same type of company.
Well, it's also, they have a lot of China risk. There was news earlier this week that iPhone sales in China were down 24%. China's going through a major economic contraction, which had been largely predicted for the last decade plus. I remember watching these 60 Minutes videos about ghost cities in China, the big property bubble that was occurring there, the whole master plan society and implications related to that. We're seeing that unwind in China occurring now, and all of the exposures for companies that are exposed to China, you're seeing some even U.S. companies that are exposed to China, some negative impacts there, Apple being one of them, Starbucks another. But yeah, it's Apple is a hardware company first and foremost, and majority of its sales and earnings are from iPhones and iPads and AirPods. It's really hard to keep that cycle going, especially as the phones and iPads get better and last longer. It's hard to keep up with prior numbers.
You got to wonder if those, what are those things that they put up, you strap it onto your face or whatever. I wonder if that's a
Vision Pro.
Vision Pro, if that's going to be, remember they had like the Google Glass type thing, and then there was a the Facebook version of like a camera that you could attach to your sunglasses. It seems there was actually a journalist from the Wall Street Journal that wrote about her first month with the Apple Vision Pro and said it was really cool and everything, but after the first month, she said that she stopped using it and it started to accumulate dust just because it's like such an isolationist type thing. But yeah, Apple announced that they were terminating their electric car program. They obviously have an amazing product line in terms of iPhones, and Apple TV is really cool. The quality that they produce in terms of the television shows, like Masters of the Air, for example, that's coming out with their 8th episode tonight, by the way. I'm going to deviate a little bit. That show is awesome. If you have any interest in or in enjoyed Band of Brothers or the Pacific, Masters of the Air, I think, is in that same class of quality. It's amazing. But and they're on Apple TV, so which is what brought it up. But they obviously have an amazing product line, and they're ubiquitous in our society. But they really are not growing that much because they've gotten so much. They've permeated through society so much. They're not growing like Google, for example. Google stock price is off significantly, but they're growing. At least they're growing their earnings still on a considerable basis.
Google is a lot of self-inflicted wounds. Number one, and then number two,
like their image generator.
Yeah, exactly. So they also are threatened. Their biggest business is search, and the market sees search as highly threatened by these large language models like ChatGPT. And so basically, instead of Googling something, you can just ask your phone, hey, you know, bring me 5 articles on this, or, you know, search this. And it's not going to use Google anymore. Supposedly, it's going to use ChatGPT. I haven't actually gone that direction yet, and maybe I'm just a late adopter to these things. I've heard just hearsay that people are using ChatGPT for more search-related tasks. But I haven't actually, I still Google things, and I just don't see that as something that is disrupted that quickly and easily by different technology.
I still Google things as well too, but I find that there's so many advertisements now that appear for popular searches that I'm having to sift through to find something that's like objective. If I'm trying to get data on something, meaning like it's not a paid link. And I think that's going to be, they're obviously trying to drive revenue, but it's good.
Well, also remember, Google has Google Cloud, which is the third largest cloud provider in the world.
YouTube.
They've got YouTube. They've got Waymo. They've got DeepMind, which is their AI division, which they fell on its face in the last few weeks. But they're going to get that together at some point. So I think that they've got some of these potential businesses beyond search that make it a little bit, in my opinion, if you're lining up Apple versus Google, Google trading at almost half the valuation as Apple, and has some some strong growth potential in other businesses, makes a lot more sense to me.
You know what? While we're talking about individual companies, one that's had a lot of difficulty lately is Boeing. You see today.
Well, I was actually on a flight this morning, and I flew United, and there were a flight yesterday was a wheel fell off of a Boeing plane, and a flight this morning ran off the runway, and I'm sitting on my, I actually checked, I had two Airbus, planes, and I was like, thank God.
Right. Well, that was one of the, while we're talking about airlines, Spirit Airlines was in a proposed merger with JetBlue, and that fell apart and their stock price tanked. But the whole thesis on investing in Spirit Airlines is that their whole fleet is Airbus airplanes, and there's going to be so much demand for those going forward because Boeing's just really having so much issues. I mean, about 6 or 8 weeks ago, an emergency exit door fell off of the airplane mid-flight in Portland.
Yeah.
They've had these two instances that you just referenced. Really just seems like they're lacking any sort of strategic bearing, which is a really big problem from the standpoint of, like, you know, there's a duopoly in the commercial airliner industry. It's Airbus and Boeing, and a part of our big from a commercial standpoint, our country uses these planes as a diplomatic tool. And so it's almost like a national interest that we produce really high quality planes, and we've really sort of faltered in that regards, or Boeing's really faltered in that regards. I don't know what changes that. While we're talking about individual companies as well, too, Costco that stock has been unbelievable. It's trading at like 50 times earnings now or something like that, which is just crazy for a food company. It's earnings season, which is why we're talking about these types of companies. But Costco came out with their earnings today. Stock price is down. I don't know what it's down right now, but it was down like 6% this morning.
7%.
It's down 7%. Yeah. They're basically saying that they were able to, a lot of these types of stores were able to pass along. What's the way they call it? Greedflation, but it's essentially they are allowed. Companies,
they've got pricing power.
They have pricing power, so they can raise prices, and consumers were accustomed to paying higher prices, and then those companies benefited accordingly. So Costco was part of that whole trend, as was any grocer or any company that was in that industry. And Costco's reporting now that their expected inflation is like 0% on a prospective basis. So quite different from like a couple of years ago when it was like 8%.
I think we've been saying this for a while now that I just can't believe, like, Jay Powell came out this week and said, like, it's not assured. 2% is not assured. And they're going to hold rates where they are until they have more confidence in the trajectory of inflation. And then you go and look at all these companies and industry experts, come out, and I saw, you see Costco, they're expecting a 0% inflation rate for 2024, being able to raise the price of the goods that they're selling to their customers. You see Barry Sternlicht, who's the chairman and CEO of Starwood Capital Group. He talked about the rents that they're receiving are turning negative on their apartment complexes across the country, which is the major inflation component, core CPI component. So I just don't understand why the Fed doesn't utilize data that is real time, I'm sure that they do. But if you're going to be that stringent and data dependent, and then you're going to use lagged data that's 6 or 9 months old, it just doesn't make any sense to me when you're making those types of decisions. When it's pretty clear, if you look at apartment lists and their rent growth, you hear from people like Sternlicht, if you look at these earnings calls, and you talk about Costco or Walmart, that they're not able to raise prices anymore. Obviously, inflation is lower than the stated 3% rate, that or 2.6% rate, whatever the last core CPI number was.
Trueflation says the U.S. inflation is at 1.63%, so below the Fed's target. And to Doug's point, why is the Fed in a restrictive stance? And Jerome Powell said explicitly yesterday at his test, when he was testifying to Congress, that they were in a restrictive stance, which means that they define like a neutral level where they're not hurting or helping the economy, a restrictive level when they're trying to throttle the economy. And then there's a accommodative level where they're trying to boost the economy. They explicitly state they're in a restrictive strategy right now, meaning that they're trying to slow down the economy. But to Doug's point, the actual data shows that the economy is already really kind of slowing down. So it's kind of redundant.
Yeah, I'm just concerned that the exact problem that got us, the exact issue that got us into this mess in the first place, which was raising rates too late. We were at 0% interest rates when housing was at an all-time high. The meme stocks were going crazy. You could get a mortgage at 2.8%, and inflation was clearly rising, and we're still at 0%. And then we raised rates faster than any Federal Reserve had done since the early 1980s. And then that actually ended up being okay. The economy didn't crash. We had a bear market, but that's besides the point. Bonds are still in a bear market as a result of it. But are we not just doing the same exact thing all over again, but in reverse?
Right. On the other side of the coin, asset prices are like stocks, for example, are at all-time highs. And so the Fed is going to cut rates at some point. They explicitly stated that it's going to happen in the short term. And so if all of a sudden we switch to if asset prices are at all-time highs when we're going into a cutting cycle, meaning the
asset prices minus real estate,
right? So stocks basically, and cryptocurrency, of course. Cryptocurrency is ridiculous. Bitcoin hit $70,000 a coin at one point in time. I mean, one point earlier today. So anyway, so if the Fed cuts rates and is an accommodative stance and boosts the economy when stocks are at all time highs, that obviously would conceivably be a good sign from the standpoint of investing in stocks. Although there are so many different dynamics that exist, if the Fed's cutting, then presumably they're seeing things in the economy that are concerning, and they're trying to avoid any sort of unnecessary recession. So,
yeah, if they do it too late, I think that's the argument. You can preemptively cut and say, look, inflation is still at 2.6%, but it's trending much lower than our 2% target. If we look at the last couple of months of data, let's cut once, then next month or next meeting, let's cut again and try to land this plane, slowly instead of just have it come to a screeching halt. And I think that that's really the major risk to the market. And I continue to contend that the increase in inflation and upside surprises to inflation are, I think, such a low probability event right now compared to the other side, which is deflation. I think that should be the major risk.
Yeah, you can make the argument that oil prices are going up and that's going to be a tailwind for inflation. Gas prices are at like a couple year highs or whatever. But with what you stated about housing prices and not housing prices, but rents, which is one of the actual, when the Fed's definition of inflation, the single largest input is housing. It's all weighted and everything. But anyway, housing is the single largest.
Oil is $78 a barrel. I mean, it's not like...
Right, it's not a huge... It shouldn't be a... There's nothing conceivably that's on the horizon that's going to cause sort of stagflation that was the concern of the last couple of years, really. So yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there's the potential for a misstep, but it's also really, if you just look at the anecdotal type of data, it's bars and restaurants and airports, et cetera, are still bumping. So in spite of all that, in spite of the fact that rates are at multi-decade highs, the economy is still bumping right along.
Speaking of misstep, we haven't had a misstep in the market since October of 2023. We're approaching 17 of the last 19 weeks that the S&P 500 is positive.
That's
which
been
would
so
be,
nice, huh?
It's unbelievable. So nice until it's not.
Right.
I think this is stale data, and I can't find the source for this, but we'll correct it if it's incorrect. I think it's since the 1960s that we haven't been on a run like this in terms of low volatility and positive performance in the market.
This too shall pass.
Yeah. Ben Carlson wrote a piece on his blog, and the title of it was "What Does a Healthy Correction Look Like?" And he went back and looked at all. Basically, he's making the argument, and I'm agreeing with him that the market looks like it needs a breather. I mean, you can't just keep going up forever every single week. Although we've talked about that, you're better off investing at all time highs than trying to wait for a correction. It is getting pretty ridiculous, especially some of these names. Ben actually did some really great research on this. There's been 33 corrections over the last 90 plus years that are not bear markets. So between 10 and 20% drawdowns. The average drawdown, 13.8%. The average peak to trough, 116 days. He said the S&P 500 is up around 70% in total, 13.5% annualized in the 2020 so far, despite the fact that we've had two bear markets. Imagine that. I mean, we had the 2020 crash of 35% in, 3 weeks? And then we had a 2022 bear market, peak to trough went down like 28%. We're still compounding at 13+% annualized since the start of this decade. Pretty dang good there. But it doesn't mean that these corrections aren't around the corner and we should expect them to occur at least annually. After a run like we've had over the last 6 months, you would say we're due for one. And I think it's probably healthy if you look at, you have these cryptocurrencies that are going crazy. Bitcoin's at 70,000, but you also have Shiba Inu, which is like tripled so far this year. So all this stupid stuff that was occurring in 2021 is coming back with a vengeance in early 2024.
Right. There's Joe Biden and Donald Trump have their own meme coins now, and they're up 100,000% this week. This guy in Miami that's a crypto guy that was talking about, he's basically like dunking on all the haters now that all of his meme coins are up, thousands of percent or whatever. But yeah, the unique thing about these cryptocurrencies, I guess, there's no more argument that Bitcoin is like there's any more utility to it, I don't think, than a speculative asset. But when speculation does,
well, I think gold. I think it could be argued that it's a better version of gold,
or it's easily transportable gold, essentially.
Yeah,
right. But it's not. There's not like it seems like they're just when risk is on, these things come around, essentially. And we're which is a positive thing from the standpoint of, there's been several cycles now where these things still hang on, so. Conceivably, that's and I guess gold was probably the same thing way back in the day before it became an established asset or whatever. But it's these things are sticking around. We're obviously in a very risk on type of environment where these things are flying through the roof, and they're the smaller ones that are associated with memes, like Joe Biden meme coin or the Donald Trump meme coin, are flying through the roof. Is just indicative of a very risk on type of appetite. And I was thinking about this earlier today when I was driving into work. We talk about the Sir John Templeton quote: "Bull markets are born on pessimism, mature on skepticism." No, it's born on pessimism.
This is like your favorite quote. You got to get it right. Right, I think you've said this on our podcast every time, like 10 times.
Right. But bottom line is that bull markets are born on pessimism, grow on skepticism, mature on optimism, and die on euphoria. There, I got it right. So, and I was thinking to myself, where do we sit in that sort of spectrum right now? Well, there's some euphoria in certain parts of the overall markets, and specifically referring to these stupid like meme coins and cryptocurrencies, et cetera, that rear their head or whatever when there's a lot of euphoria or whatever, and people are getting rich. Same thing. You could say the same thing about AI stocks, but I think that on the whole, otherwise,
at least there's utility there.
There's utility there. It's not just some speculative asset. Although there's some speculation, obviously, when there's $200 billion of asset price movement, like an Nvidia today. But as far as the other underlying securities, it's like the other 493 stocks, or whatever, in the S&P 500 that haven't really joined the rally so much as this Fab 7. It still seems to be like skepticism and some optimism. So if I were to look at this from a prospective basis, or if I was to look at this from an objective basis, I would say that we're probably in the sort of sixth inning of the bull market here. I don't know. But then there's,
I would say there's different areas of this. I mean, if you look at like small and mid caps, they haven't recovered to what the large cap growth has done over the last couple of years, or last 18 months. So I think it's, I don't think it's like a full scale mania going on right now. I think there's pockets of idiocy. And I think my indication as to where we are on the AI wave is more optimistic than speculative, but that's just my read on that. But then if you go back and look at like, okay, you still have like energy companies or banks or sort of old world industrial that trade at, 8 and 10 times earnings that are growing. So there's that side. And you also have real estate that is completely depressed. And so you don't have this entire market of,
that's really choppy.
Yeah. So I think you could, this could be, very similar to the early 2000s where you have a whole swath of the market that is priced appropriately or undervalued. And you have a subset like .com or broadband, that's severely overvalued, and that maybe you just have some sort of corrective action there.
Right. Right. I couldn't agree with it more, Doug. Well, guys, Doug, do you have anything else to add, or should we call it a day?
Yep. Well, thanks for joining. This is Lanyap Podcast. Give us a 5-star review, and we hope you have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Lanyap. This podcast is brought to you by Stokes Family Office. If you liked this episode, consider sharing it with a friend. You can subscribe to future episodes in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information about Stokes Family Office and Lanyap, visit us at stokesfamilyoffice.com. The information in this podcast is educational and general in nature and does not take into consideration the listener's personal circumstances. Therefore, it is not intended to be a substitute for specific, individualized financial, legal, or tax advice. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a final decision.